This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Third hour of 4.5 on Brant and Danny. Welcome back in. Thanks for listening. January 15th, 2021, just after 4 o'clock. On this Beltway Blitz, we do it every day at this time. The latest on the Wiz, who can't seem to play games with a COVID outbreak in their locker room, and the Caps, who are 1-0 and looking to get to 2-0 with another game tonight as they play a back-to-back with Buffalo. But let's get the Blitz started right now with the Washington football team. Speaking of the team, remember, Ryan Kerrigan is on the show in 20 minutes at 4:25. We'll ask him about his future. J.P. Finley, NBC Sports Washington. All right, J.P., why don't we start in the front office? What are you hearing about the GM search?
They got four candidates. There's going to be four interviews. It's going to be an outside hire. I expect this to happen with some speed. I think we might wrap this whole thing up by the end of next week. Ron wants his own guy. He's going to find his own guy, and I think fans should be okay with that.
What will it mean for Kyle Smith?
I don't know, but I think he will be elsewhere, but that's not a sure thing. That's not a lock. I don't know Kyle's contract structure either, so he could be under contract for another year or two, for all I know. I just think he's not getting promoted, and maybe he'd want to land somewhere else, but we'll see.
What do you think, though, about the season he seemed to have with whatever this audition was, and he's not even getting an interview? Like, that's a story to me. That's weird.
Yeah, you know, I actually wrote about that this morning, Grant, and I think clearly something didn't go well, or at least great, between Ron and Kyle. I think, you know, he was presented with an opportunity. If you listen to how Ron talked about him back in January and February versus kind of when he was asked about him in November, the tone seemed to shift. And I do think on some level we got to be sure, like as a fan base, as a media base, that we're not maybe providing too much praise to Kyle. There's been a lot of – I know that people loved this last draft, but there's been a lot of bad draft picks over the last 4 or 5 years too. I mean, just look at the second round, and it's been a train wreck. And I think it's really important not to blame Kyle for the sins of Bruce Allen, but if Ron decides he wants to start fresh, I think he deserves the benefit of the doubt there.
I agree with that, and I'm not saying he shouldn't be able to, but I would challenge the idea of, like, a lot of bad draft picks, and 31 other teams have had him too. I would stack their drafts over the last few years up against anybody, and in fact, if you look at free agency, the first year he's run the pro department, this is as good a free agency period on the cheap as they've had in years and years and years. I guess for me, I don't really care one way or the other what they do, but this is a front office that hasn't had good off seasons for a long, long time, and they have one, and now you're probably bringing in a guy from Carolina. And it's not like you were running out of trophies in places to put trophies in Charlotte. I'm cool with it, but this whole, like, they should be fine with Ron wanting to do Ron's way. Yeah, I'm fine with it, but we should be able to ask questions. He ain't Belichick. They went 7-9.
I agree with all that. I would push back on the free agency. Ron went out of his way to credit Scott Turner for J.D. McKissick and Pete Hayner for Logan Thomas, and those are the big hits in free agency. And to your point that Ron ain't Belichick, I think we're getting confused that Kyle is somehow Bobby Bethard. I'm not saying that.
All I'm saying is he ran the department this year.
Other teams, right, but nobody else is calling Washington about Kyle when they could too. I think that's it. Like, I call it Ashburn syndrome on the podcast, and I talk about it all the time, where the city, we talk ourselves into things that maybe aren't exactly as the perception is, and maybe that's what Ron thinks. I don't have the answer. I'm just trying to look at it from every angle.
I get that. But to me, I think here's why we don't know who to assign credit to, JP. It's always murky. There's never a clear delineation. One signing, it was Doug Williams picking up a cell phone and talking to Adrian Peterson. The next, he has to turn his phone off because Bruce Allen's going to acquire Alex Smith. Nobody knows who does what. So a tight ends coach got one guy. The offensive coordinator got another guy. That's what's so confusing all the time. And now when they're going to hire a new GM, what's that guy going to do? Is he just going to hand reports to Ron and Ron's going to do what he wants? The structure is always murky to me. I think that's why we over-assign or under-assign blame, responsibility, triumph or whatever to people.
I hear that, but I think whether or not we did, this is what we were told was coming when we this time last year, when all we heard was a coach-centric approach. That means the coach is in charge. Look at, I mean, Andy Reid has a longer track record at that point and had more playoff appearances, but Andy Reid fired John Dorsey to get his own GM in there. Dorsey had a really distinguished track record running the Chiefs. This is what happens when these coaches are in charge. And I mean, look at what the Jaguars are going to let Sala pick his own GM. He's never even coached the game. I get that it seems we all have this thought that GM should hire the coach. They should all be on the same page. This is what looks to me is going to be the reverse of that, but it's what Ron has said he's going to do all along.
JP Finley, NBCSW, does a great job covering the football team. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Goodbye, Tom.
See you, bud.
I love you.
There he goes.
That's sweet.
Tommy's final day. Let's talk some hoops. Tony Massenberg, been watching him pre and post on NBC Sports Washington for many years, longtime player in the NBA, and a guy who's done very well in his post-career breaking the game down. Tony, your insight will be appreciated here. I mean, what a year this is going to be for these players, trying to stay COVID-free, and so far not so good for the Wiz. They've had a couple games postponed. Woj saying today their Sunday and Monday games with Cleveland are not going to happen either. I mean, it looks like they could go a while without playing basketball, huh?
Yeah, I mean, again, much like everybody's life is being impacted by the virus, you know, and no bubble scenario for the NBA right now, which is, you know, a clear deterrent to the virus and went very well down in Orlando. But when you start talking about doing the regular season with, you know, 30 teams and 30 different cities, then, you know, that bubble scenario is not really realistic when you talk about trying to play 72 games. So you're just seeing the league make adjustments as they anticipated. I will give the NBA credit. They anticipated this and left some cushion in the schedule to allow for it. So hopefully those games will be able to be made up.
Tony, they played their best game of the season before all this happened against Phoenix. Now, part of that, you know, Phoenix isn't going 4-for-30, whatever the heck they did from three-point range most nights, and you caught them on an off night. But still, I thought they played their best basketball of the year. Anything sustainable out of that for when they do end up playing again?
You know, the thing is really going to come down to is for the Wizards is how well they're shooting a basketball and how many people are shooting the basketball well. Because defensively, you look at them, it's been a struggle all season. And clearly, you know, they did an excellent job of shooting the basketball against Phoenix. And that's why you saw such a lopsided victory. So I don't expect them to be on like that every night. But I do expect them to be a little bit better defensively. And I expect the offense to not be like it was against Phoenix every night, but I do expect them to be productive offensively. That's the one thing they can do. They are capable of putting points on the board, and I think that's going to be what gets them over the hump this year if they're going to get there.
Tony, what do you think of Russell Westbrook so far in Washington?
Well, clearly Russell's been compromised. He hasn't been as explosive as we've seen him in years past, and I actually commented a week ago that I thought Russ may be kind of entering the period where he needs to downshift just a little bit because, you know, that's what happens to guys that have played 10 plus years in this league. And especially guys that play 110 miles an hour the way that Russell Westbrook does. You just can't expect him at this stage in his career to be the guy that he was in Oklahoma. I don't think that, Russ is going to be a guy that's going to give you 25 to 27 points a night. I think he's probably more of an 18 to 20-point a night guy. But we'll see what he is when he's fully rehabbed from the quad injury and certainly just making the adjustment to being in D.C. You've seen Russ make a conservative effort to involve his teammates and not sort of dominate the basketball. So that's a change for Russ, because he's been a guy like I said, 100 miles an hour and a walking triple-double, which I still believe he's going to be a walking triple-double. But I just don't think that triple-double will be 25 or 30 points. I think it'll be more like 18 to 19 points in there.
Tony, how do they get Avdija more looks and more involved? They get it when you got these two guards. Those guys should get the lion's share of the touches. Plays run for Beal is the way that he's scoring. But I like what this kid brings, especially on the offensive end. I think there's some creativity there. You know, if he can get the ball in some space or on a wing, go one-on-one and be his own kind of playmaker, maybe with the second unit or something. How do they get him more involved? Because I like what I see.
Well, I think it's twofold. I think he has to, again, as a rookie, he's still figuring out the NBA game and trying to figure out exactly where he fits in and where his shots are going to come in the offense. And I also think it's also on his teammates a little bit to look for him, because he is, like you said, a very nice player and has a nice package of things that he can do on the basketball court when you talk about the ability to shoot, pass, and play a little bit of defense. And again, he's got great size at the three spot. He's a guy that can give you some minutes at the four. But clearly, his passing ability combined with his ability to shoot from three, I think is something that it would be really beneficial for the Wizards to have in their lineup, their starting lineup, or even coming off the bench. So I think it's just a matter of time for him, like it is for most rookies when they come into the league. It takes, you know, a fair amount of games, certainly more than what he's played, to really find your niche and get into your happy place.
Tony Massenburg here on G&D's Beltway Blitz. You can follow him on Twitter at Tony Massenburg. You're a stud. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thank be you, well. Great talking to you. Let's stay at Capital One Arena, but talk to the roommates on the ice. How about those Caps? 6 goals in the debut last evening for Peter Laviolette's bunch. They are 1-0, and they got a chance to put a couple more points away tonight against Buffalo. Samantha, was that good Caps, bad Sabres? What should we take out of game number one?
Yeah, you know, I mean, definitely, I think, sloppy play from both sides at points of the game yesterday. But I think overall, I mean, it was a positive start for this Capitals group. Obviously, a lot of new faces coming into the room. You know, first off, Peter Laviolette and all the new systems that he brings, the new energy. So I think it was just good for the group to get off to a good start in a 56-game abbreviated season. The Caps are going to need every single game they can get in this really hard East division. So I would say good so far, but yeah, definitely remember this is the Buffalo Sabres they're playing again.
Samantha, what do we make of Samsonov?
Yeah, I think, you know, good start for Samsonov. Obviously a couple goals. I'm sure he wants to get back there, but I think overall he looks pretty good. I think moving forward, it'll be interesting to see if he can stay consistent. Obviously consistency for a goalie is key, and him being so young, only 23 years old, he really hasn't been tested a lot. So I think it'll be really interesting to see moving forward. But again, so far so good, only game one.
It has only been a game, as you just pointed out, but I wonder if you had any observations, things that jumped out systematically, strategically under Laviolette that might be way different than what we've seen recently.
Yeah, you know, Laviolette's teams are very aggressive. They want to, you know, execute in the offensive zone. It looks like their neutral zone coverage is really good. They're really aggressive getting out, getting breakouts. I thought just in general, this system really helps guys like a Jacob Verana, a Richard Ponick, who like to use their skating a lot. You know, you look on the defensive side of things. Brendan Dillon, I think, had a really great game, really stood out to me. Justin Schultz is another guy who can use his skating a lot. So I would say overall, yeah, this team wants to skate. They want to go up and down the ice, and they did that last night.
Any surprise Nick Dowd's not facing any further punishment?
Yeah, you know, I think I found it kind of interesting. I think the angles that a lot of people saw were very limited. So obviously the Department of Player Safety has a lot more angles than we do. But on first glance, it definitely looks bad. But I think, you know, more and more, if you kind of look at it, I think he just might have grazed most of the body there. There wasn't really clear evidence from the DLPS side of things, but he actually made direct contact with his head initially. So, you know, a little bit surprising. The Caps kind of dodged a bullet there.
Capitals get their first win of the season last night against Buffalo. Game number two tonight. We're going to see a lot of this, aren't we? These back-to-back same teams playing. I got to imagine that could lead to some frisky, intense play, maybe some scraps, some fights that you didn't see in the past. Do you buy that or no?
You know, I was kind of hesitant about that at the beginning of the year. And then, you know, game one, there's already a couple scrubs on the ice. Looks like there's probably going to be something else tonight. So I think overall, yeah, I would approach them as mini playoff series. You know, Tom Wilson said that, you know, we don't have a rivalry with the Sabres headed into the season, but they're probably going to end with one. I mean, they play every team in the East eight times this season. That means eight times against the Penguins, eight times against the Bruins, eight times against the Flyers. So I think it's going to be a crazy year.
I'm going to be sick of the Bruins midway through the second. Sam, thank you so much. Always appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Samantha Pell covers the Caps for the Washington Post. Now, when you say you'll be sick of the Brewers midway through the second, Danny, do you mean the second period or the second game?
Midway through the second period.
That feels
like right,
right.
Right in the middle of the second period, I'll go, I can't stand these Sabres.
Here's something I can't stand. And by the way, Ryan Kerrigan's joining the show in about 7 minutes. So looking forward to catching up with him on G&D. Make sure you're listening to 425. We have to do this now in 2020. It's just part of the territory. It's
okay.
Not being able to get Ethernet at a hotel. You know, you just have to log into wireless, and they don't even give you the hard wire anymore under the desk. It's 2021. This is what happens. But Deshaun Watson tweeted, this is the whole tweet in quotes, "I was on two, then I took it to 10," end quote. I don't know if that's, lyrics from a song.
Now I got to figure out, is that a song?
That could be quotes from a movie. He could be in his car jamming out to some new album that I don't know about. Everyone is taking this to mean that Deshaun Watson is more furious than he was and that he's upping the ante and that they're going to have to trade him because he's more angry and he's not playing nice and doesn't want to be in Houston and isn't going to be with the Texans. But this is now what this is. And I'm anti-players doing what I view as immature. And I love Deshaun Watson. But the veiled, subtle digs on Twitter, I have no time for that. We're all adults. Say what you want to say or don't. Post a video if you want, bashing the Texans. I'm fine with that. But just own your words. Like, the weird, like, emoji thing just ricks me. Like, frowny face. Deshaun Watson wants
now.
To be traded. Yeah, and now we all got to figure this out. So that's the quote. "I was on two, then I took it to 10. And everyone's taking that to mean he wants to be traded more than he used to.
I don't know. I miss the days of quotes. You know what I mean? I miss the days of even like a source close to says. Now I gotta figure out him. I mean, like, it wasn't that long ago where we did that. Now I gotta do on his Instagram. He posted a lyric from a song that's about going to a different place. But then you come back later in the song. But what does it mean? And 30 minutes of debate. And Stephen A. Smith going, "Oh, clearly means something." I don't know, man. I'm not good at this part. I don't like this part. Give us Deshaun Watson. You can call us. Call a radio station. And we'll put you on and we'll let you say what you want to say.
There are platforms. I'll bet you they want to talk to you in Houston. Bet you there are a couple reporters that will let you get your word out there. You don't even need reporters anymore. You got your own Twitter account. You got your own Instagram. You got your own probably Facebook if people are still doing that. You got the Players Tribune. You can pen a 10,000-word story if you want to. Or I guess you can post an emoji. This is not quite an emoji, but it's kind of an emoji. Let's talk to Ryan Kerrigan next. What's going to happen with Kerrigan moving forward? We'll ask him on G&D. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. If you are new to the show, as we have moved into the drive time slot this week and you're just finding us for whatever reason, thank you, thank you, thank you. We appreciate that. For all of you who were sticking with us in middays and made the move, you are part of how we got here. So thank you as well. We're excited to be your new drive time show here on 106.7 The Fan moving forward. Hopefully we'll be talking a lot of football and a lot about this guy for many years to come. Ryan Kerrigan is one of the longer tenure players in Washington. He is the all-time leader in sacks for the football team with 95.5, and he is a four-time Pro Bowler who's had a terrific career in burgundy and gold. Ryan, good to catch up with you again. It's G&D. How are you, man?
Great, man. It's good. Thanks for having me on again.
Absolutely.
Always fun, dude.
Let's start with the offseason. I mean, it probably started before you would have liked as you guys made the playoffs and then had the round one exit to Tampa Bay. But what's the week been like, and how have things found you here since your season ended?
Yeah, it's the first week of the offseason is always a little weird, you know, especially when you're you lost last game of the season. So it's different, but you know we kind of just take it as they come, and you know it's a bummer that we weren't able to pull that out against Tampa Bay, especially because you know felt like we had a chance there, but just didn't make enough plays to get it done.
What was missing, do you think, in that ball game for you guys? You were playing with them. You're going up and down the field. And Taylor Heinicke, of course, he balled out, which was unbelievable. So much fun to watch as a lifelong fan of this team. But what do you think you guys didn't have in that game against Tampa that you wish you did?
We didn't have enough plays defensively, enough splash plays, enough big-time plays. And, when you give up 31 points, you really are putting yourself in a not very good situation. I mean, for our offense to get us 23, we felt like, you know, that should be plenty of points to get a win. And so for us not to, you know, hold up our end of the bargain, for us to, you know, give up 31, you know, granted it's, you know, a good offense, obviously, you know, Tom Brady and all these, you know, talented players, but still it's, you know, when you're, like I said, when your offense gives you 23, you feel like you got to come out there with a win.
Ryan, I want to circle back to some of the accomplishments of the defense this year, some of the new faces, and just get your insight on those guys. But there is a pressing question that people want to know about with you, and that is that you are soon to be a free agent, and you're no longer a starter here with the draft picks the last 2 years of Montez Sweat and Chase Young. And so the question is this kind of the end of an era? I mean, what do you think is going to happen this offseason? Do you think you'll be back in Washington?
I mean, I really don't know. I mean, I'm obviously not under contract right now, and you know, no talks have taken place to get that, you know, to get that done to for me to be back here next year. So I mean, I don't know. So make of that what you will, but I don't know what's going to happen, and I guess we'll see come March, you know, where you know, if I'm back here or where else I'll be.
Here's a big question, I think, though, that on your side of things, like, the team may want to bring you back because you can't have enough pass rushers. What's your opinion, though, on how much football you got left as a starter? Do you want to start again? Do you think you can still start? Do you like being spelled and getting less reps to stay fresh as a role that Rivera said maybe could extend your career? Like, what's your mindset on where you're at in your playing career right now?
I mean, I definitely still see myself as a starter. I feel like I mean, with the way I take care of myself, yeah, I'm, you know, chronologically 32, but I guess, you know, from a football standpoint, I would think I'm more, you know, 27, 28, you know, with how I take care of myself and, you know, the way my nutrition and all that. So I definitely feel like got a lot of good football in me left. And honestly, you know, with this year, with, you know, playing, you know, the lesser role that I played, I feel like that may have added even, you know, more quality football ahead of me. So that's my mindset. I feel like I'm still very much, you know, capable of being a starter, very much capable of being a productive pass rusher in this league and someone that, you know, a defense can rely on.
Ryan Kerrigan with us here on Grant and Danny. And you mentioned that in that role. I mean, you've been such an iron man. You played so many snaps, just such a high percentage throughout your whole career, finally missing some time last year, really, for the first extended time in your whole career. Was that frustrating at all? Was it a tough adjustment at times to just be, you know, on the field at a much lower percentage than you'd been your entire time here while you put up such great numbers?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a tough adjustment because you're used to being out there a lot, and, you know, you can, you know, okay, this rush, I'm going to use this rush to, you know, kind of set up my next rush. But, you know, when you're kind of, you know, rotating in there and you're being the swing guy, you kind of got to throw your fastball and make something happen right then. Don't really have the chance to really set something up as much. So that's what I tried to do, is just, you know, kind of come in hot and make some plays. And I was proud of the productivity I was able to have, you know, given the role. And but yeah, to answer your question, it was a tough adjustment at times.
Yeah, I mean, you were the leader on the team in sacks at the midway point of the season, and the efficiency that you showed this year was really impressive to that point. I was shocked early on, Ryan, with, you know, how many snaps you were playing and at times how little you were rushing the quarterback. Was that something you expected? Because it's easy for an outsider, like someone listening in L.A. might say, well, they have Chase Young and Montez Sweat. They drafted them. Those guys are going to play. I guess I just assumed all three of you would be on the field a lot, and maybe that's not doable. I don't know. But did you go into the year knowing that was how it was going to go, or did you find out as the year went like the rest of us, all right, here's the role. I got to adapt and make the most of this?
I mean, I knew it was going to be a different kind of role than I was used to, just with, you know, with Sweat, you know, emerging the way he did. And obviously you draft a guy who, you know, is largely considered a generational talent like in Chase Young. And you know, the role is going to be, you know, a little different. And I think, you know, you just kind of, like a lot of people, I'm sure, just can't, you kind of figured it out along the way. And so again, with that, I just tried to, again, make plays when I was in there and do the most with the reps I had. And yeah.
What did you see from those two guys, you know, at practice, meetings and everything else? And, you know, I imagine as someone that's accomplished an awful lot in this league with a track record, I'm sure they were picking your brain. What kind of stuff would you guys talk about? And what did you see in those two bookends?
I was so impressed with them, but not only them, Payne, John, Matt, all of Tim Settle, all those dudes. I mean, the way that they approach the game, the way they approach practice is what's going to make them, you know, special players in this league for years to come. I mean, Sweat, the growth in terms of, you know, learning how to take care of your body, learning, you know, how to study your opponent. You know, the growth that, you know, Sweat made from year one to year two is, I mean it when I say I think he's going to be a star in this league, because of the mindset that he's, you know, learning, not to mention that he's, you know, 6'6", 260 and runs a 4.4. And, you know, Chase the same way. I mean, the approach to practice, the approach to wanting to get better and wanting to do things the right way to get better, it really is going to serve those guys well, especially because they're young. To have those, you know, traits as young people in the league, I think is going to really make them a problem for teams in years to come.
And you touched on Chase with the talent. It's obvious. I mean, it just oozes off, you know, how fast he is and picking up that fumble. He looked like a defensive back that weighed, you know, 270 pounds in his own right against San Francisco. But what do you see from him in terms of the pass rush, Ryan, in terms of where he's starting right now and maybe, you know, learning some of the moves and different things that you've mastered over the years to push that sack total even higher?
I think, I mean, sacks are a funny thing. That the old adage is they come in bunches, which is very true. I mean, some games you might rush the passer really well and you'll not have a sack to show for it, and then other games you'll come unblocked and you'll have a sack, and so sacks are a weird thing. But I think the way how active Chase is both in the pass and the run, I mean, he's always going to give himself a chance to make plays because he's so active. He plays really hard and he's really aggressive, and so his sack total is only gonna go up. And I mean, he's like I said about him and Sweat earlier, they're gonna be a problem for teams in years to come.
I know that you don't know what the future holds, right? And you kind of mentioned that, but there's one thing it sounds like we can clear up, because there's been some thought. You know, you're 32, which is not old by any means, but you know, you're in your 30s. It's funny asking you that. I'm also 32. Like, we've kind of we're the same age. Like, we watch Little Giants at the same time, right? But the conversation is that, well, maybe he'll retire. He's got two kids now or anything. You plan on playing a lot more football. Let's just get that out of the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My body, I feel great, and I still want to play, and I still enjoy playing. So, no, I have no retirement plans, that's for sure.
And it's funny you say that, because this is funny to say. I said to my mom, I was talking to her earlier, and I said, yeah, Kerrigan's coming on the show today. And she said, I hope he's still here or whatever. She said, you know, I would think basically that he's got a couple years left. And I'm like, well, this guy didn't count every pee that he's ever eaten and, like, spend $500,000 on his body every year. And I have no idea. I might be underselling you. Like, so that you could not keep playing at 32. Like, guys that stop playing at 32 – they burn the candle at both ends. They're going out. They're doing – like, you are home and sleeping at 9:30, and I feel like you did all that.
Too much kale.
For what's left in your career. Like, you've never eaten a cheeseburger. You don't know what bacon tastes like. Coca-Cola Classic means nothing to you. I get the sense you didn't do all of those things and, like, spend whatever you spend on your body so that at 32 you could just say, it's been a good run. Like, you're the kind of guy I could see playing at 37, something like that.
Well, the people at Shake Shack might think differently about you saying I've never had a cheeseburger. So, but that's always for this week, every time of the year, right after the season. But
No, you're right. I mean, the work you put in day in and day out in the early years of your career, in the off season when, you know, it's February and or, you know, March and the season's really long away, the work you put in taking care of yourself then is honestly, like you said, it's not only to feel good now, but to help me on the back end of the career as well. And so, all those decisions, you know, have led me here, and hopefully I can keep, you know, doing good things and investing in my body to, you know, allow me to play longer and play at a more productive level for years to come.
Ryan, what do you like playing in better? 34 outside linebacker style, 4-3 DN, hand in the dirt. I know, like, you know, base package barely matters anymore. There's so many sub packages and you're almost pretty much rushing the passer, but what do you like playing in better?
It's tough to say. I mean, I think I can be productive in either. I mean, I played in the 3-4 for 9 years, so I mean, I definitely have a lot of familiarity with that. And I mean, I was back in my college days the last time I'd played in the 4-3 before this season. So I mean, I feel comfortable in either, honestly, because I mean, like you said, the base package of, you know, the 34 defense, we're not in a ton anyway, you know, just because a lot of teams are so heavy in 11 personnel. But honestly, either one works for me.
Ryan Kerrigan, a couple of moments left on Grant and Danny. I got no problem gassing your tires up a little bit or pumping them up. What's the term here?
You could gas somebody up and pump their tires.
Okay, because you don't gas tires, right?
You don't want to. That's bad.
It is weird to say to a guy my age, and I was on the beat covering you initially, and you've been a great friend of the show for many years, but you've become, for a lot of people, and I'm one of those people who don't remember Super Bowls, one of my favorite players in team history. A lot of people would say that, so... First of all, I just want you to know that I think from the whole city standpoint, you're what it's supposed to look like. And I think that we hope that Chase Young and all the guys that come after you, they care about the organization and they make the organization look good and they say the right things and they do the right things in the same way you did for a long, long time. You got a legacy here one way or the other. I get that you're not sure what happens. I mean, if they come to you and say, hey, we want you, we'll keep you, you're probably still the third guy. Is it one of those situations where you just have to see what else is available to you, or could that still be a workable scenario?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not closing any door on Washington or anything. I feel like as a free agent, I have to, you know, weigh my options and really consider all factors of all options. I think that's, you know, going to be what's ultimately what's best for my family and I. And, yeah, I've loved my time here. I've really developed a lot of great relationships, you know, with people around the city, with you guys, with so many folks around here, and I'll always love it here. And I mean, so whether I'm back or not, that's not going to change. So, I just feel like as a free agent, I gotta you know, really weigh things out and decide what's going to be the best situation.
Wherever you end up, wherever you go, maybe unless it's Dallas, but like most anywhere else you go, we'll be pulling for you, dude. Echo everything Grant said, man. You've been a lot to a lot of people for so many years. And if this is the end, hell of an end. And if it's not, welcome back, man. But thanks for everything, for not just today, but over the years, buddy. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Dan. Thank you.
And I still think that you reading poems, even though you couldn't do it anymore once you got married, which you shouldn't not get married for the benefit of one segment on our show every year. I mean, that wasn't it was a moderately selfish decision, but not completely selfish. But that was still the best segment, I think, that we did annually on this show. I miss that. I'll always miss that.
Yeah, it was a hell of a time. And honestly, you know, I was expecting some Leanne Rimes, you know, for my intro today, and I mean, come on, guys, what are we doing?
Slightly asleep at the wheel. That's fine. Yeah. We're not batting 1,000, but we're batting, you know, 867 or something like that. The only regret I would have is, this was weird to see you walked off the field. You're kind of looking around FedEx like, oh, so maybe
what
this
if you
is
took
the
out
last
a poem?
Ride. There's nobody there. There's nobody there just waving at you. You know, it's very weird.
Yeah, that was, I mean, and that's one of the things about, you know, the season, you know, I mean, the sack record, you know, there's no fans in the stands, and you know, at the playoff game, there's no one in the stands. That was it was a bummer for sure. Oh, here we go, we got Leanne Rimes going now.
Yeah,
there we go.
Tommy's gonna take care of
it.
Absolutely,
it's gotta be weird to HBK to an empty chair. That's just
by the way,
weird.
Danny. You know, he also names his kids after presidents. That's not just a me thing. There's two of us doing that.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, I got Lincoln and Hayes over here. So, yeah.
All right,
man, this is beautiful, guys.
I'll let you win the race to 3. How about that? You're, We're gonna take a step back. That's all you.
Okay. Oh,
Ryan,
man.
Thank you for the time. Appreciate you today and over the last several years. And it won't be the end of the road having you on the show, but we'll see what happens, man. Good luck.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
And be well. There's Ryan Kerrigan.
Go ahead,
the Washington
man.
Football team. Just a good dude, man. I like when good dudes are good players and they play for your team. Call me a sucker.
I like highly productive people that care about other people. There you have it. That's Ryan Kerrigan, man. We both have multiple stories of just really good things that he's done that he never sought credit for, you know? And, oh, by the way, the all-time sack leader. Sorry about that. Sorry about how well that worked out.
Tommy quick on the trigger. I like that. Grant and Danny on the fan. If you missed our conversation with Ryan Kerrigan, make sure you grab the podcast. You can rewind on radio.com or go to thefandc.com when we are done. A couple of takeaways from the discussion. A, he's not retiring. There's been some thought that maybe this would be the end of the road. He's got a couple kids and a family now. Says he's still ready to play football. That should surprise nobody. You know, he's, as he said, he's 32, but he, I mean, he's missed games for injury one time in his entire career. And he takes really good care of his body. The second thing was he wants to start. He made it pretty clear. He thinks he's still a starter. He thinks he can start. That it was a tough transition to being the third guy. It's a harder job in that you're not able to set things up and kind of, you know, do things early in the game that make a defensive end look better and a no-tackle look worse late in the game when you go to the reverse move. So I thought that was pretty telling as well. I'm reading between the lines. He made it seem like the door is still open. He could be back. He said all the right things as he has his entire career. I assume he will not be here. They haven't talked to him yet. Said, make of that what you will. I think Ryan Kerrigan played his last game in Washington, and the real shame is that there wasn't a fan base there to cheer for him as he came off the field, which is tough.
Yeah, it's not ideal for anybody. I mean, we talked about this at the low levels of high school kids, of, you know, seniors or college kids who didn't get to play their sports, and you get such a limited window to do that, et cetera. So, you know, you want those kinds of send-offs, right? Which should have happened in that last home game theirs. Once it became clear that, you know, they were going to lose or whatever, Ryan Kerrigan should have had a chance to get a massive ovation as he was leaving the field. And people should have been chanting his name and you know, giving him those kinds of wonderful moments. I mean, the same way, we didn't know if it was Ryan Zimmerman's last at-bat for the Nationals at his last home game. But every time he came to the plate, there was a chance it was. And he made funny jokes about it right after the fact. But, you know, he comes to the plate, he gets a big, fat, huge standing ovation. Maybe his last home game. We don't know. That's what should have happened there. You put in the time. You did great. You were awesome. Face of the franchise during some dark times. You were a reason to tune in an awful lot. So thank you, Ryan Kerrigan. But he didn't get that. And that's unfortunate. I mean, there are greater tragedies in life, but that certainly is one in as far as sports go, right, just on that level. You just wish that he'd gotten his just due in that regard.
More on that in the 5 at 5 coming up at the top of the hour. Just breaking in the NFL. And in the 5 o'clock hour, we're going to go hard in the paint like Dikembe back in the day. We're going to be talking about the games this weekend, and we'll get you full previews. We'll go confidence points picks before the end of this sucker as well. But news out of the league, while we were talking to Kerrigan, this just broke a few minutes ago. Arthur Smith is getting the Falcons job.
There you
go.
The
offensive coordinator from the Titans. They offered him the job. He has apparently accepted it, reportedly. So that means three coaches have gigs now for those vacancies. You got the Jaguars with Urban Meyer. You got Arthur Smith, who helped turn Ryan Tannehill back around after the Adam Gase experiment failed in Miami, and who really called some successful games and seasons as a run-first guy in Tennessee. Big, big proponent of how he marries the run and the pass and play action. I loved how Kevin Stefanski did that in Minnesota, and he took that with him to Cleveland. You see how it works. I think Smith is very similar in that regard. And the third of those openings now that has been filled is that Robert Saleh is the head coach of the New York Jets. You went with the Saleh hire as your favorite. I'm going with the Smith hire as my favorite. We're probably the only radio show in the country that has two choices, and we didn't go with Urban Meyer, because apparently the Jags have already sold enough season tickets that they're projecting that they're going to fill. They're going to fill the two lower bowls of their stadium for the first time, supposedly.
It ain't that far from Gainesville, right? Where he now, the ending wasn't great for him in Gainesville at Florida, right? Where everybody wasn't terribly excited about how he sort of walked away, but still, he won a national championship there. He accomplished a lot, right? He did more than anybody since Spurrier for them. So, Yeah, I mean, that's a celebrity. That's a rock star. And that's why you do that, because who's more boring than the Jaguars? Who's a less exciting franchise in the sport than the Jaguars? Now, the owner and everything, they're exciting, right? He plays half his games in London when everything is normal. You know, this is a group that was in the AFC title game just three seasons ago and has fallen further than you could fall since then. They needed some life, and that's a celebrity coach. That's what it does. There's no one-player acquisition, even with Trevor Lawrence. I don't think the tickets would have been sold in that way. But Urban Meyer down there is still legendary.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Four openings remain. Top candidates for them include names like Joe Brady in Carolina, who was at LSU a year ago at this time, Eric Bieniemy, the assistant in Kansas City, to Andy Reid. You know, you'd have to imagine that one of those two guys is going to land a job, if not both. And there are some big names who have coached before, like Marvin Lewis and Jim Caldwell and Leslie Frazier and Todd Bowles, who are all getting interviews, and maybe one of them gets another shot as well. Our next, the 5 at 5 on Grant and Danny. And as we continue into the 5 o'clock hour, our detailed breakdowns on all four games this weekend. You're listening to The Fan.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.